Welcome on to a Sunday night edition of the Dunk Time Basketball Podcast. Got to get to the Miami Heat offseason preview, and then we got all sorts of other talk. Got some more, actually, to discuss on the Boston Celtics, because I realized that despite going for like 45 minutes the other day, we left out one scenario that I really had intended to get to, and we just didn't. The renegotiation and extension possibility for Avery Bradley and Isaiah Thomas, which Thomas actually commented on at exit interviews last week. And then the New Orleans Pelicans, how can they add, they can't, to Anthony Davis and DeMarcus Cousins and possibly Drew Holiday. We're sponsored today by Betterment. Betterment.com/capspace is a URL to get up to 6 months of no fees of lower cost automated investing. Okay, let's start with the Miami Heat, Danny. And really, they're in an interesting situation, similar to a lot of those teams that last year had guys who had small cap holds coming off rookie contracts that then we're going to get new contracts. But instead of it being for that reason, it's because they're kind of in a use it or lose it situation with cap space due to the Tyler Johnson offer that the Nets made last year and that the Heat were inclined to match and did.
Johnson was subject to the arenas provision, and under the rules of the old CBA, the outgoing CBA, if you matched a deal like that, you had to follow the actual salary structure. So he's getting the non-taxpayer mid-level exception, about $6 million for 2017-18, and then jumping all the way to $19.2 million for 2018-19. So that jump of 14 basically offsets some salary that's going to come off the books. More than offsets.
Yeah, so we're going to make the assumption, we talked about this in the news section a bit ago, that Chris Bosh will come off their books. It's been reported that that is going to happen via a long-term injury exclusion, but they have come to an arrangement by which there's no chance he could return to the Heat's books as it could happen under the old CBA. So Bosh will be off the books. As of now, my best projection for them is $30.9 million in cap space. The variables there: Wayne Ellington has a non-guarantee of $6.3 million. That guarantees the first day after the 2017 moratorium. So they'll have some time to decide whether they want to keep him around and whether they can do better with that space. I'm going to guess that they probably cannot. And Ellington, I think, is a value contract. One more year at $6.3 million. He shot the lights out from three-point range last year. So that's one variable. If they wanted to move on from him, they could get up to $36 million in space. Josh McRoberts, as we previously had mentioned in the news items, has understandably opted into the last year of that star-crossed four-year full mid-level exception contract he signed in the summer of 2014, which was when they still were trying to get LeBron to come back. They signed him and Danny Granger, and I guess LeBron made the right decision not to return because neither of those two contracts worked out. McRoberts, an effective player when healthy, but has not been healthy in some time, so that's why he opted into that $6 million. But if they were to trade that, which would be difficult because they don't have a ton of sweeteners to throw in there, or if they were to stretch him, then you could get up to 40 or even as much as $42 million in space that way. And then finally, another scenario that's been talked about, although I think is very unlikely, is if they traded away Goran Dragic and his $17 million, he's still due two more years after that at $18 million and then a player option for $19 million the 2 years afterwards. If they traded him away, they could get to $57 million in space, so probably not quite enough to get two max guys. And Dragic, I think, when you consider how much someone like Holiday is going to get, I think Dragic is a better player than Holiday still, although he's older, but has aged pretty well so far. A value contract, really, I think, with 3 years left on that deal, essentially making about $18 million per.
And with Dragic, I think you can let supply drive it. You know, if you get somebody who's interested and is a really good contractor, just a really good player, then you can think about moving him. But they're also going to need a point guard if they trade him. So it's going to be complicated. I don't really see that as a likely outcome this year. But the other part that makes Miami's summer so fascinating is that they have this group of talented free agents who all, maybe with one exception, outperformed their contracts, but they only have non-bird on all these guys, which means that they have limited means outside of cap space to re-sign them.
Yeah, their cap holds for those guys, and we're talking about James Johnson, Deion Waiters, and Willie Reed,
and the Luke latter Babbitt.
Luke Babbitt, though, they have full bird rights on. So I think put him actually in a different category.
That's right. I forgot about that.
Yeah, they actually acquired him via trade. And actually, you'd have to imagine then that they would keep him on their books because his cap hold is the minimum and they have full bird rights on him. So he actually gives them a little extra spending power there. And frankly, they have like no power forwards on the roster at all. So he started for them and shot the ball well, got into better shape as everyone who goes to Miami seems to. At 28, I think he can be, you know, at least a decent player for the next couple of years. We'll see what his market looks like. But yeah, the issue with Johnson and Waiters and Reed is that they essentially have to use their cap space already to bring them back because they're only on the team for 1 year. Their cap holds are 120% of what they made last year. So in the case of Waiters, that's the room exception, about $3 million. So his cap hold is 3.5. And Reed, his cap hold is the minimum. James Johnson, $4.8 million cap hold. So, but that's how much they count on their books. So you can't pay them really more than their cap hold is. It doesn't make any sense to keep their cap hold even on the books. So now they're essentially re-signing them. You have no advantage versus if you're just signing outside free agents. Now that doesn't mean they shouldn't bring those guys back. And I'm sure they're going to try for Gordon Hayward. They're going to try for Blake Griffin, the latter of which I think maybe they have a little better a chance at. And Griffin, I think, actually would be a great fit with what they need. Of course, there's the health issue with him at age 28, which we've talked about plenty of times in all these other previews. But they don't really have a hometown advantage. I mean, let's talk about Waiters first. He is a rare free agent who's actually really young and is a decent player. 25. He had his qualifying offer rescinded by the Oklahoma City Thunder last year. I think that Waiters actually is a player that teams that really are trying to, and you wouldn't think this with, you know, what his reputation is, and he's not going to shoot as well as he did last year, but he is a player that I think teams who are really trying to compete with Golden State or Cleveland actually could use because he's really strong and capable of switching pretty well. So his ability to guard multiple positions, I mean, I don't think he's that, and he can get to the basket at least. I mean, he's not a good finisher, but he's improved his passing, and you know, he's not going to shoot as well in long twos, but I think he's a quality player. I don't know that I would look at him as, all right, we have solved our shooting guard problems if you sign him, but I think he certainly would be worthy of a contract, you know, $10 million a year in like, you know, 3 or 4 years, something like that. Maybe not quite starter money, but someone you could expect to come in and play 25, 30 minutes a game for you. And he's also an excellent spot up shooter. So I think he can be useful for you in a smaller role, but there's not that many teams that have the cap space to sign someone like him. So, you know, you'd expect maybe he'll go to a worse team, and I think he'll probably want to try and stay in Miami. It's just a question of, are they going to make a competitive offer for him or not? And I think they probably should, frankly, once they strike out of the max guys, which we expect to happen. I mean, they could try to make a trade to get guys to come into their cap space, but they don't have a ton of assets going forward. I mean, what do you think about Waiters and what kind of contract he might garner on the market? Am I being even too low on him?
I think you might be, because he's a gettable shooting guard who's also young, so you don't have to worry as much. I think a team's going to give him too many years. I think that's going to be what happens, is that he's
25 though. I mean,
what I'm saying is we don't know, like, there isn't that kind of security in terms of what he has been, you know, like, he was wonderful this past year. I think he was good in the playoffs. So I agree with you that kind of something in the $10 to $13 million range for 3 years would be good. I think he's going to get like 14 for 4 years. That's my instinct on kind of where it goes, because remember, other than like JJ Redick, in terms of two guards that are on this market, there are not that many that are unrestricted. There are guys that teams are going to like, but you're not going to get Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, so it doesn't really matter. So I think that it doesn't take much, but you are right though that as the supply shrinks, it'll be whether it's like what happened last year, it'll be whether a team gets on him early or he ends up just not being any franchise's first priority. But the other thing I want to mention about Miami particularly is,
let me finish up on Waiters if you're going to change the subject.
It ties in with him.
Okay, so go ahead then. Yeah, sorry.
So basically the other thing that Miami has to figure out is, so they have Dragic, who they like. They have Josh Richardson, who has one more year on a cheap deal that he's going to be restricted. And then they have Tyler Johnson. So if they think Waiters is probably the best of the non-Dragic's, then they should definitely try to re-sign him at a reasonable rate. If they think he's maybe either third now or potentially third, then maybe you get comfortable with what you already have.
Yeah, and they also could re-sign him and then maybe try to move either Tyler Johnson, good luck, or maybe Josh Richardson, who will be a restricted free agent after this year, making the minimum. and see if they can get someone back as a forward and maybe take that guy into their cap space. Or maybe if you put in Josh McRoberts into that trade as well, see if you can come up with someone who can start for you. I mean, I think there are definitely teams that can use waivers, because we've talked about this actually, that like there are a lot of teams that are really missing some kind of juice off the bounce. We mentioned waiters is not a great finisher, but he and Dragic, I think the Heat, I want to say, led the league in drives this year, and waiters was a big part of that. And obviously that groin injury that he suffered down the end of the year was probably the reason why they missed the playoffs, frankly. I'm trying to think of like who the other suitors would be. I mean, I think Indiana maybe would be in the market for him. I don't think the Knicks would. I don't think Orlando necessarily would. Sacramento already has Buddy Hield. Brooklyn would be a team that probably could use him. They don't really have any good two guards right now. So the fact that, I mean, he is a versatile player in the sense that he can get to the basket, he can pass a little bit, solid spot up shooter. And now if you're going to rely on him for huge volume and to make as many long twos and threes off the dribble as he made last year, you're probably gonna be disappointed. But then the fact that he can switch as well and even play the three at times defensively with that big barrel chest and his length, and he also you know got into great shape in Miami, we'll see whether that continues. So yeah, well, so if you were Miami, would you offer him 4 years and at $14 million a year?
414 is a little rich for me. I think I'd probably try to get him around 411. And then it is kind of piddly at the kind of the end of that because he's older. But I really do like Josh Richardson, and I think that that could help. But no, if it was 14 flat, I think I would do it, you know, just because then you're not, maybe you're doing that. And I'm also, he would be an interesting guy to do a descending contract with if they're not going to max squeeze every drop out of their cap space, just because then it gets more palatable, not only for them, but for a potential trade.
Yeah. And maybe what they're thinking would be is, all right, we've got Hassan Whiteside under contract for three more years, making between 23 and 27 million ascending over the next couple of years. He's got a player option for 2019-20. Tyler Johnson, same thing, player option for 2019-20 that I would imagine he would probably take. Goran Dragic, same thing, $19 million player option in 2019-20. So maybe what they would think is, this is going to kind of be our team. Why don't we just pay what it takes to bring back waiters? Maybe James Johnson too, although probably not, you know, he's 30, so that's maybe a little bit different. But maybe we could say, all right, if we could just get Dion, we'll overpay him a little bit and give him like a 2+1 and see if that's something that he would be interested in. And then this will just kind of be our team for the next 2 or 3 years. And then when Dragic, Whiteside, all those guys come off the books, Pat Riley probably will be ready to retire by that point, then we'll just hit the reset button that year. Because I think actually, like, this team, if they bring everyone back and everyone stays healthy, you know, they could be like, they're probably not in the same tier as like Washington, but I mean, they went 30-11 over their last 41 games. I mean, like, you, in some ways you'd think, hey, these guys deserve a chance to come back and run it back. And then, you know, Tyler Johnson and Justice Winslow will be back this year, and Richardson could get better. Maybe Dragic takes a little bit of a step back, but hopefully you could just continue to get better. Waiter's only 25. He could get better as well. So maybe that's the thought, is just what other option do we have other than just kind of keeping this team together for the next couple of years? And then, you know, contracts aren't that long these days. We can kind of reset in 2019-20. We'll have our pick then as well, because that's the other thing too to remember, is they don't have their pick this year. It's only top seven protected going to Phoenix from the Dragic trade. But then they have in 2019 and 2020, they have their pick, and then they owe 2021 unprotected again to Phoenix from that Dragic trade. So I think that would probably be my plan here, unless you get one of the max guys, because I don't think, like, their free agents are some of the best guys on the market. Like, if you can re-sign them because they're comfortable there, give them a big offer right away, and just kind of run this team back, I don't really know what other option you have. And then they would just have to fill in, maybe get one more forward, a backup center. Reed, they don't have bird rights on either, but he's kind of less important. He's 27 to this team, and I think they can afford to bring back Johnson and Waiters if they wanted to, and definitely Waiters. And then maybe you could just bring back bring in someone else for Johnson instead. But I think he's really important in what they're trying to do, even if he's 30. So I don't know. What do you think of that plan?
Well, one small clarification at first, it relates to the term this year. The Heat have their 2017 first round pick. It's 14th overall. They do not have their 2018 first round pick. That's the one that's 1 through 7.
Yeah, okay. I'm sorry. Thank you. Yeah.
I just wanted to make it clear because some people might go, wait, what? But I agree with your vision. I think that that's a logical way of doing it. And also, I think that approach is honest about the supply issue. You know, the idea that there aren't that many many guys on the market that are really going to be upgrades for them other than the players who we don't think they are going to get. So doing that and also probably holding it to 3 years would be wise, because some of the biggest mistakes that are going to happen in this free agent class are giving fourth years to older free agents, kind of like the Taj Gibsons, maybe the Paul Millsaps, though he provides value in the first couple of years, those types of things. And so if Miami can kind of prevent themselves from making those mistakes by the structure of their own books, I think they're in a good place.
Yeah. Now, if they could get Blake Griffin, I certainly would do that if I were them, and be okay with moving on from Waiters. I mean, Griffin fits into exactly what they need, other than the fact that the spacing fit with Whiteside is not great. But Griffin's used to playing with someone like that already with Jordan, DeAndre Jordan, because they need some additional playmaking, especially when Dragic is out of the game. They don't really have another natural point guard on the roster. That's not really who Tyler Johnson is. They're hoping that Josh Richardson and Johnson can improve their playmaking, but they're not there yet at this point. And I think, you know, if Griffin could stay healthy, of course, always a huge if, that's a team that maybe could get into the same area as like Washington or Toronto next year, you know, or be a clear favorite for the five seed at least in the East. And who knows, maybe Toronto won't have Kyle Lowry anymore and they're going to take a big step back too. Some housekeeping stuff here before we get into maybe who they would look for in the free agent market outside of their own guys. Josh Richardson, non-guaranteed at the minimum. They'll of course bring him back. Rodney Magruder, same thing. They'll bring him back. He was outstanding last year as a starter. I mean, people forget that with all the hype on Johnson and Waiters that Magruder and Luke Babbitt actually started for this team a lot of the way. Wayne Ellington, we mentioned him, and then Okara White, who is effective as a small ball power forward as well, bringing a lot of energy. Another great development guy out of their Sioux Falls outfit in the D League. He's not guaranteed as well, but I think all those guys, especially the ones who are making the minimum, like you're almost certain to bring them back. We mentioned the player options that Waiters and Reed are certain to decline. Their draft pick situation, the only first rounders that they can trade if they want to try and bring somebody else in into their cap space, perhaps, or to move off McRoberts and also potentially get a useful piece, are 2023 and 2024 due to the Stepien rule, because you can't trade future picks 2 years in a row. So they're out 2018. So that means you can't trade 2019. They're out 2021. So you can't trade 2020 or 2022. And so then 2023-2024, they could always do swap rights potentially, but due to all their luxury tax avoidance with Andy Ellsberg's excellent work that he did, especially last year, they have no second rounders at all until 2022. So they're really, again, not a ton of sweeteners to invite someone to take McRoberts if they wanted to open up a little more space.
So we can move on to the free agents. My general stance with Miami is that they do such a good job finding guys that I think they're better off finding the next Willie Reed rather than paying the current one, though the current one might not want that much money. And which basically means I want every young guy who's kind of floundered where they were to go to Miami, especially after what happened with Waiters. So, but the problem is a lot of those guys, you can't rely on them as being a key part of the rotation. So those are more like the lottery tickets on the back end of your roster rather than your maybe 7, 8, 9 guys, which is I think what they would be looking for if they can't get a max player.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think just, and we don't know whether Babbitt is going to return or not either. I mean, right now, just what they have in their roster, not counting the outgoing free agents, I mean, they basically need like threes and fours. I mean, Magruder is kind of a three, but he's pretty thin, ideally. They also need someone who can play make a little bit at forward with Tyler Johnson, your backup point guard. And they desperately need a backup center as well. Whiteside, not a guy who plays a ton of minutes, gets in foul trouble quite a bit, gets injured. Any kind of like power forward or combo forward, they have like essentially none on the roster other than maybe Okara White, who I wouldn't necessarily be relying on, although he's had a few moments. So a guy I think would be great for them would be Mo Spates, because if they could just get him into better shape, I think he could be really effective. And then the things that you can do too, if you have point guards who aren't that dynamic off the bounce, you can either get a better point guard who can drive to the basket more, but most backup point guards aren't like that. So the other thing you can do is just give them more space to work. And that's something that Spates as a backup center, his evolution the last couple of years shooting threes, could be useful at. And maybe they can get more out of him defensively if he can trim up a little bit in Miami.
On the big man front, I'd also be interested to see what they could do if they could kind of rehabilitate the value of Jeff Withey a little bit. I think that he could maybe, you know, just kind of in the same vein as Willie Reed, like, well, a
guy
who maybe... Well, I
think that would be habilitating, because I don't think he's ever gotten more than a minimum contract, but...
Well, I think there was a point between when he was still under contract where it looked like, okay, he could be a solid backup center, and, you know, he's a different kind than Spates, but I think that could work too.
Yeah, I definitely don't think, like, I realize that they need a center, but, like, I wouldn't pay more than, like, $3 or $4 million a year at most for a backup center, because that's just, there's so many of those guys out there, and I think they're good at creating those guys as well. And you know, they're going to play small. I think Jonas Jerebko, Ersan Ilyasova would be good for them. I think if James Johnson gets too expensive, they could look at Patrick Patterson. Patterson seems like a guy who's always been undervalued around the league. Also, with the reports out of Toronto that they're going to bring back Serge Ibaka, you'd have to imagine that either PJ Tucker or Patterson would be the odd man out there, who are also free agents. So Tucker is also, like, it seems like a quintessential Heat guy, although again, he's a little bit older. But I mean, you know, we talk for a lot of teams about, hey, what is your timeline? They're not going to contend for a championship in the next 2 or 3 years. But I think of their timeline actually is like, all right, let's just try to be as good as we can with this core for the next 2 or 3 years. And then once Whiteside and Dragic come off the books, then you're going to totally rebuild. So I wouldn't mind signing some older guys, and, you know, maybe they kind of peter out in the third year of their contract, but I'm not as deterred by that for them as I think for a lot of teams, because they're just, I mean, this team was pretty decent last year. Like, why not just try and win some games and be in the mix in the East? And yeah, you're not going to win a championship or contend, but hey, it's better than just sucking, especially in a year when you're not going to have your pick.
I was thinking about shape and realized that I would love to see Jared Sullinger go there for a low value and just see what he can become, just on that idea of, like, using a year to work on yourself. Because, I mean, he basically was out of the league. I mean, he got traded in a salary dump and then never really played.
Send us your fat guys.
Yeah, and he's only 25. Soldier's 25 years old. Like, give him a shot at, like, the minimum or something close to that, and see if he can be your next Dion Waiters. I still think the same thing if KJ McDaniels ends up getting cut loose. Just, he's not fat, but just, like, give another guy to give him a shot, because nobody has done a better job with kind of misfit toys than they have. But they can also get better
Demo
guys.
Would, I mean, be another guy maybe who could work there.
Yeah,
Terrence Jones. I mean, I think if I'm an agent, I mean, it, you know, it can go one of two ways. It could wind up like Derek Williams, where he just, you know, ended up getting released and they didn't rehabilitate him. But what they did with James Johnson and Waiters, you got to be saying, hey, like, if I have this client who's like, you know, he's not in the greatest shape, like, he's a little bit lazy, like, we're looking to rehabilitate him over a year, like, all right, you know, let's send him to Miami. Let's see if Miami can kind of get him in shape. I mean, their reputation has got to just be sky high right now with what they've done for the guys out of the D League and for some of these distressed veterans.
Is there anybody more on the higher end, not the distressed asset, that you think is a particularly good fit for them? Ideally, I think on the wing is their most important need.
You know, Danilo Gallinari, maybe? Like, if they could fit in Gallo and Waiters somehow,
that'd be a fun team. Actually, holy crap, that'd be a fun team.
That would definitely hurt their defense. Gallo is pretty bad defensively, especially at the four these days. He is a distressed asset, but Rudy Gay might be a guy as well. Sean Livingston actually would be a really nice fit there, because he could play point guard on offense and then also, like, defend larger guys on defense, next to Tyler Johnson or Josh Richardson. You know, I think that he would be a good fit there as their backup point guard. Give them a little bit of shot creation as well in the post at times.
Something else that Miami should do, and I don't know this definitively, but I'm guessing they have a good, like, pro scouting group, is this: if they strike out on the best guys, would be a great year to take players that other teams see as distressed assets and get things back for them, because they're so poor in terms of, like, second round picks and even first round picks that they could do it. So if they could find somebody who, like, a team is just frantically looking to cut a little bit of space and they cost, like, $6 million, they go, hey, this guy's not as terrible as you guys think he is, be a good option for that too.
Yeah, that's a good thought. But I still think they're probably going to just be playing on using all the space that they can. And another option too, I understand that Tyler Johnson's contract goes way up next year, but they still could have $26 million in space, which is not, I mean, that $26 million next year may go further than $36 million goes this year, or $30 million goes this year. So maybe they just, if they really can't get guys on long-term deals, bills that they like. They just do the same thing that they did last year, essentially, with a new set of guys. I'm not sure who exactly that would be, but and then try to get back into the market next year. Or, you know, if you need to, you could maybe move Tyler Johnson. You'd have to pay a pretty good amount there, probably. But, you know, Johnson's probably a player who's worth $10 million a year, even if he'll be making 19 those next 2 years. So he's not like that horrible of a player to, like, he at least contributes, you know. So that could be another option. I think I'm less enamored of that, frankly, than just trying to get your team for the next 2 or 3 years now, especially because you have more space. But all right, I think that's about all I've got on them. We'll get to the Boston Celtics, more on the Boston Celtics, because their offseason is so fascinating, and then New Orleans momentarily. But first, this from our friends at Betterment. Betterment.com/capspace can get you up to 6 months of no fees for lower cost automated investing. The way Betterment works is it's not the type of thing where they're trying to get you to make transactions because they charge a commission on transactions. For their basic level of service, they charge just a flat fee of 0.25% per year for their digital plan. That gives you automated portfolio management, tax-efficient investing features, and award-winning customer support. And the fees are based on your account balance. There's no minimum balance there as well. If you're early on in your career, you want to just get started with investing, start putting something away. You'd be shocked at how much even just putting away $100 a month or $500 a month or something like that, it can really do for you once it's all said and done. And if you're interested in a higher level of human advice, you can go to their premium tier. That's still only a 0.5% per year. There is a 100,000 minimum balance on that, but you can get unlimited calls with their team of CFP professionals and licensed financial experts. They also have some cool products like Tax Impact Preview that tells you what your tax impact will be of any moves that you make, and Smart Deposit. If you're someone with an income that's not as steady, you can set it so if you get over a certain amount in your checking account, it'll just automatically invest the surplus for you once a week. So once again, the way to get started with them, betterment.com/capspace, Betterment, investing made better. All right, so now I want to get into something we should have talked about with the Celtics that was in the outline. We forgot to get to the idea of renegotiating and extending Isaiah Thomas and Avery Bradley, because we talked about how if they don't get Blake Griffin, or you would even say if they could get Blake Griffin, but and they don't get Gordon Hayward, and reports have indicated that they're looking at going after an all-star front court player, then they could also use their cap space, which could be as much as $27 million. Maybe in this circumstance, they would just hold on to Kelly Olynyk and have about $20 million in space left to try to do a renegotiation and extension for Avery Bradley, Isaiah Thomas, or both. And basically what you'd be doing there to refresh on renegotiation and extension is those guys are making way under market salaries for the 2017-18 season. Bradley due about $8.8 million. Thomas had a declining contract. He's all the way down to $6.3 million next season. So the way that would work is essentially you say, hey, we'll renegotiate you up next year. And then you essentially treat that money as part of your new contract, and you would then do an extension on top of that at the new number that we're giving you for next year. So let's say Bradley, 8.8, they say, hey, we'll use $11 million of our cap space, Avery, to bump you up to $20 million for next year. And then we'll give you a 3-year extension, which would be the most that they could do on top of that, for an additional $20 million per year. So you're essentially getting a 3-year and $71 million contract right now with no risk of injury or performance decline or anything like that. So that's an interesting approach that they could try, maybe more palatable, although it does take away the idea of potentially getting better next year, but you ensure that Bradley and Thomas maybe are around for longer, and you also, but not as long maybe as you'd have to give them, and on less of a per year number because you're sort of getting credit for what you're bumping them up to this year as well. So Danny, my question to you is, let's take Bradley first. I think he actually is the more realistic renegotiation and extension candidate, being younger. He'll be 27 next offseason, 2018. What would be a number you'd be comfortable with for renegotiation and extension for him if you're Boston?
I'd be trying to get him. So this is the total value of the contract. I'd be trying to get him somewhere around 3 years, starting at $18 million. So that would be 54. So that'd be 54 for 3 years. So if you could throw $10 million of that 54 on the first year, that the remaining contract looks a lot better. I think he'd want a little bit more than that, but the security of getting it now as opposed to waiting would be pretty desirable.
Yeah, I don't think he would agree to that. I think he's going to want over $20 million per season. And the timing will be very interesting, right? Because you and I have both theorized that 2016 was a bubble year, despite the fact that the cap's going up another $7 million. About half as many teams will have potential max cap space this year as had it last year. And so that if you're an agent and you're a player right now, comparing to what guys got last year, Avery Bradley, he should be getting like, you know, $25 million a year, you know, like as an excellent defensive player, good 3-point shooter, excellent cutter as well, can come off some screens in the mid range, like not a great offensive player, but someone who could, you know, average in the mid teens for you and play great defense. Those type of two way players are very valuable. So if that's what he's going to want, that doesn't really make sense to me for Boston. And even if you could say, you know, maybe if you could bump him up to 20 this year and then do another, so that would be 3 for 71. Maybe he would essentially, you know, it's $11 million this year and then 3 years, $60 million on the end of that. That's too much for you, you're saying, if you're Boston? Because I think that's the lowest you could start, he would consider.
I'd consider it, but just considering the wealth of options that they have, like, I'd be, because the other interesting part of this is theoretically, that would not preclude them from making a trade. It would preclude them from signing somebody, but they would do this after it, but they could still acquire, if they wanted to, Jimmy Butler or somebody like that, because those players would be acquired using trade rules.
Yeah, and there would be, after Bradley or potentially Thomas, who we'll talk about in a second, were to sign this, they'd be prohibited from trading him for 6 months. So do under the extend and trade rules. So you remember Russell Westbrook last year signed one of these in August, and then he couldn't be traded until February. And of course, no one was talking about doing that at the time. So with Bradley, the timing issue will be interesting, right? Because think the only time you're doing this, if you're Boston, is, okay, we've struck out on Gordon Hayward, we struck out on Blake Griffin. That's also going to be an issue for them, because you met these bigger free agents, those guys usually take longer to make their decision. You know, all right, we got to do all these meetings, and you know, it's July 4th, it's July 5th before those guys have made their decision. Well, remember when Kevin Durant made his decision last July, on July 4th, basically everyone else was off the market already by that point. Dwayne Wade, I think, was the only major guy who was still on. So if they're going to try and play in the Hayward Blake Griffin camp, and you know, they'd still have Olynyk, some other restricted free agents maybe would be available, but most of the unrestricted guys will probably sign. If you're Taj Gibson or PJ Tucker, some of these other guys we talked about as maybe a potential target for them, those guys will probably be gone. And now you're probably left with going back to Bradley or Thomas at that point as maybe one of the most efficient uses of your cap space. And the timing there will be interesting too, because maybe at that point people will see what the market is and that the market is reset a little bit, and that there'll be even more fear that the market is going to be tighter in 2018. And we'll see that a lot, you know, you'll have a better idea too for who might actually have cap space in the summer of 2018. If you're Thomas or you're Bradley, of like, okay, these teams are gonna have cap space. If I can't re-sign in Boston, I have to go to this place. You know, I gotta go to Orlando or something. I don't want to do that if I'm Isaiah Thomas. So maybe now renegotiating an extension looks more interesting. And you also, the market has reset a little bit, so now like the players and agents might be a little more realistic about what they might get. So the timing issue of all this is going to be very interesting.
I've talked at length about how I would be uncomfortable giving Isaiah his next contract, but that completely changes if all you can do is add 3 seasons, because if you're getting out of some of the worst part of that contract. So I mean, if you're Isaiah and you want to maximize your lifetime contract value, I don't think it's necessarily the best call, but if he's willing to do it and you have that space to burn, then you're starting to look at the timeline that I think makes sense for the Boston Celtics.
Well, it's interesting with, if we turn to Thomas now instead of Bradley, Thomas only has 6 years of experience right now. And so that actually, if they wanted to bump him up, they would be using most of their cap space to do it, right? I mean, it's hard to imagine he would do a renegotiation extension for anything less than the max. And Thomas actually, you know, perhaps to his credit, said in an interview, his exit interview, that I'm fine with waiting to get paid if we can use that free agent space to improve. Now, if using that free agent space to improve means, you know, we're getting guys that aren't really going to help that much, then it's maybe a little bit different of a calculation. But if he's at 6.2, his max would be projected at 25.2 for next season. So if they bumped him up to that or close to it, and then they're willing to put on an extra 3 years on the end of that, building off of that. So you're probably getting essentially 3 years and about $100 million or so in new money if you're Thomas, counting what he would get for this year. I think you have to think very seriously about taking that if they made that offer. And is that too much, you think, for Boston? I don't know that it is, because you keep him around. Yeah, it's only 3 years. It's a lot of money, but it's only 3 years. I mean, he probably won't be worth that contract by the last two, but he at least could be a valuable player. Maybe he's coming off the bench by that point behind Marco Fultz. You keep together, that can kind of be your bridge, because again, as I've said, I don't think there's a huge opportunity cost in these next 2 or 3 years to their cap space. So you might be better off just keeping Thomas there. But I don't know. What do you think? Is that too much for him? I'm guessing you're more conservative on these things than I am sometimes. I'm guessing you're going to say it is going to be too much.
It's a little more than I'm comfortable with, but I could totally see the logic behind it, and I would consider doing it. Because the year that I'm focused on more for them, we talked about this when we did the other one, was 2019. And by 2019, that contract will be expensive, but it won't be horrendous. And you might even find a team, just because the cap will have stabilized at that point, where you're probably not going to clear his salary, but maybe you can just do something where you get other pieces that make more sense if you really need to. And Isaiah Thomas has value even if he's not at his best. He plays a very important position and a very important role, and as you said, if he's the sixth man, yeah, he's going to be overpaid. You're going to have the kind of the equivalent of dead money or negative value, but it's not like Myers Leonard or something like that where it's very little value. He's still being helpful, so I'm pretty okay with that. I would love to get it a little bit less, but if that's really all that you have to work with, I'm pretty cool with it.
Yeah, the other thing to remember too is if they're going to try and re-sign him as a free agent next year, then he will have 7 years of experience, so his max goes up to $30 million instead,
right? And he can get 5 years from that point, you know, so yeah. It's making a meaningful difference in terms of the risk that you're taking and the duration.
Yeah, and for Thomas, you know, he's had what would be the best year of his career. He's 28 right now, so for him, I mean, he's made probably $30 million in his career, maybe even less than that, I think. So this would be like total life-changing money that you're locking in right now, over $100 million probably. Or maybe, you know, they could figure out a way to make it declining or something to save them a little bit of money. But I think that general structure could make a lot of sense if they strike out initially. And yeah, you know, I thought I would that right away. I would think that Bradley, I mean, the beauty of doing it with Bradley is, you know, it's probably only going to cost you $11 million this year, and then you could maybe bring in some other guys. You wouldn't have to necessarily give up on Kelly Olynyk's cap hold. You'd be pretty tight with Olynyk's cap hold if you're going to give Thomas what amounts to a $19 million bump. Olynyk's cap hold's around $7 million. So, and they'd have $27 million, as we say. And this also enables them to keep Marcus Smart as well if they want to. Or maybe, you know, trade him later in the year, keep him as a trade piece to a team that might want to re-sign him in restricted free agency. So I actually like the idea for either of them. There's no way that they could probably do both of them, but that would be an interesting negotiation. And probably, to me, once you've gotten to the point where you're not getting Hayward or Griffin, I don't think there's anyone else out there, especially if all the free agents are gone by that point, who's going to put you over the top against Cleveland, not to mention Golden State or whoever comes out of the West next year. So I'm thinking probably renegotiation and extension if it's not just an absolutely exorbitant price, which, you know, in Thomas, they'd be paying him the max. That never underestimate that either, of just the concept of we are giving you the most that we can right now, how like that plays into the respect factor for a player. So yeah, I think that would be a good way for them to pursue, rather than just, all right, let's sign like, you know, some free agent on the market or something like that, who's just not going to help us anyway.
So the number for Isaiah is pretty amazing. To this point in his career, so this does not include next season, what they've committed to, he's made a little under $23 million. And they could pay him as much next season as he has made in his entire career.
Yeah, and they also, it helps to have a reputation of taking care of your guys and stuff like that too. And Thomas might even be tradable on that contract as well, you know, whereas maybe more tradable than, you know, if he has another good year next year, but they're still not really close, he might be more tradable on that contract than he would be, you know, just trying to trade him on this 1 year left at $6 million. All right, let's get to The New Orleans Pelicans now, slightly less interesting, unfortunately, than the Boston Celtics. The thing that stuck out to me the most about them is this is now 5 years in a row that they will have traded away their first round draft pick. Heald basically counts as that too, because he was only on the team for like 4 months before they traded him. And yeah, that's why they don't have a ton of depth. And the second thing that stuck out to me is, holy cow, does Drew Holiday have them over a barrel right now.
Oh man, it's unbelievable. Because if he leaves, they just don't have the money to replace him. It's about $13 million, I believe, if he leaves. And that's not much. That's not enough to get anything, really, in the point guard market.
No, I mean, then you're looking at like trying to get like Darren Collison to come back, or, you know, Derrick Rose, or maybe Patty Mills would be, you know, then you're talking about Brandon Jennings, Ty Lawson. I mean, just nobody on the quality of Drew Holiday. So that's certainly a concern. Before we get into the mechanics of that a little bit more, though, I want to talk a little bit about where they are just in the success cycle, because they still have Anthony Davis. He's under contract for 3 more years. But because they've basically been treating it ever since AD's first year that, oh my God, we got to win right now. I mean, they've been acting like a team that was like on the cusp of a championship for the last 4 years. And now they're basically at the point with none of those first round picks, all this long-term money that's kind of dead still. But now once again, they have to act like they're going for it, because number one, Dell Demps, always under fire. You know, he's basically been like since 2011, before even the Benson regime took over, that Demps has seemingly been like GMing for his job every year. And then also there's the fact that DeMarcus Cousins could leave in free agency after this season.
And since the designated veteran option is not there for him, it's functionally impossible to get him to sign an extension. They just kind of he's kind of a throwback to the old school system where you just kind of have to grin and bear it and see what happens. And New Orleans, I think the most important place and where I want to start with them is a more basic question, which is, even if they bring all of these guys back, if they get their realistic best case scenario, so Drew Holiday returns, they, you know, they manage things right, I'm going to assume they don't dump salary, but we'll go through that. How good are they?
Yeah, that's another really interesting question, right? And I guess, but it kind of doesn't really matter, because they do have upside. I will say that about them. I mean, let's say if they could defend the way they did for most of last year, and actually when AD and Cousins were on the court, they weren't bad last year. If they can defend the way they did for last year, and then Holiday returns, Cousins, you just try to find like some modicum of shooting, this could, maybe I could see this team getting to like 50 wins. Like, that wouldn't be, you know, being like a 5 seed, 4 seed, if everything breaks right. It never seems to for them. So from a health standpoint and everything else for that matter. But I think they do have some upside to be pretty good.
Sure. And they also have proven that they can do well with Davis at center. So depending on how they want to run a stagger, they can go to some different wrinkles on this team that could also be effective. I don't think that's going to be like a primary lineup or like what they close with, but they did a couple times during late in the season. But they also are in a situation where I don't think we're going to see many wings that basically kind of miss out on the market. But anyone who wants a 1 year make good contract, there might not be a better circumstance than joining the Pelicans.
Yeah, that's a good point, because they'll probably play you. And here, of course, well, let's talk about Drew first, actually. With his cap hold on the books, they do not really have any appreciable space. They would be at about $5 million over the cap with Drew's $16 million cap hold. So they couldn't really add anything other than their full MLE. Now, let's say you re-sign Drew Holiday for $25 million a year. That might even be optimistic, but, you know, let's say that that's what happens. 5 years, $125 million contract. And I think, from what I understand, they're going to have to come with the money. They're not getting any kind of a discount on Holiday. I don't know that he's feeling like, oh man, I really want to stay in New Orleans, unless they bowl him over from a monetary standpoint. So now they've paid him $25 million in the first year. You now are $13 million over the cap, and you're only $6.7 million short of the tax. I'm not seeing Tom Benson greenlighting a tax payment here. So basically, if you bring back Drew, you're pretty hard pressed to use even your full mid-level exception to add talent to the team, unless they can get that number down for Drew, or if they could move salary, Alexis Ejinsa and Umar Asik, basically since the moment they signed those contracts in the summer of 2015, being the most likely for that. Quincy Pondexter, maybe they could just stretch him as well or trade him away. He's due $3.8 million. So they do have some options, but of course that would require giving up future assets again, which, you know, they have no qualms about doing. But I mean, that's a concern for them if they're trying to get better, because they still desperately need some mild approximation of a 3-and-D guy. Solomon Hill was signed to be the starting three. I thought it was actually an okay signing. That's not looking like it's right, but at least now, you know, if you want to just play him as the backup four next to Cousins and AD, I think he could be more effective in that role. He's not a three. He's just not a good enough offensive player to play the three, but they don't have anyone else who can do that either on this team as it stands right now. They got to get someone like that.
It's also worthwhile to look at the broader scope idea, and we talked about the best case scenario in terms of Drew Holiday coming back. If you give him $25 million a year, then you're brushing pretty close to the tax line for the following year as well, if they retain DeMarcus Cousins. So spending,
they would probably go over it, you would think. I mean, but although at that point, you know, stretching Asik or
because of the structure of Asik's contract, it's actually pretty interesting, because since he's only partially guaranteed for the next year, if they wanted to use the stretch provision, they could actually cut his salary at that point from $11.3 million to about $2.9. So that's a lot, but you're still having to pay the guy, and then he's on your books for 5 years. So, I mean, you have
it would be 7 years.
Well, no, because... I'm saying if they did it next year.
Oh, right. Okay. If they wanted to stretch him now, he's due $23 million over the next 3 years. So it's basically a little over $3 million a year for the next 7 years, which would be, that's a long time. But, you know, it's not like they've had a problem with mortgaging the future before. If you're going to trade Asik with $23 million left, maybe if you give up a first round pick, you might be able to get off of him. You know, if we're talking, we'll see what the market bears at this point. But we've mentioned before that it seems like $20 million in dead money, and man, is he dead money. $20 million in dead money, basically, per first round pick. And New Orleans is a bad enough organization that maybe that pick's got some more upside than some of these ones that have been traded would.
Also, a thing that makes Asik special in this class, because I've looked at salary dumps a little bit already, is that he only has two real more years on the books, because then it's only $3 million for that year. So for a team like Brooklyn, that's the exact timeline they're looking at. They would rather not pay a guy for 3 years, because that third year gets to be kind of a pain. But for 2 years, it's pretty well in line. So if they were willing to give up that first round pick, I think Brooklyn would be wise to do it.
Yeah, and Ejinsa, he has 2 years left at basically $5 million a year, so about $10 million. He's like a little closer to useful, but still massively overpaid. I mean, he's basically like a replacement level, I think, backup center at this point. You know, a guy who might be on like a $2 million a year contract if you squint hard. Another scenario, let's say Drew Holiday leaves. I could see actually that they might be more likely to either move Asik or stretch him if Holiday leaves. Because if you move Asik, if Holiday leaves, they got about $13 million, but then you move Asik and now you've got over $20 million, and maybe you can get another point guard. But again, there's that timing issue too, right? Like, I mean, maybe Drew Holiday is nice enough because you could say, hey, we're going to make our best offer to him. If he's going to turn it down on the first day of free agency and take all these meetings and stuff, seems pretty clear he's not going to come back if us throwing as much cash as we possibly can is not going to do it. So now we can just start making other offers immediately. So hopefully the timing issue won't be as much of a problem as it might be for a team like Boston, where you're really waiting for a decision. Like they'll have a pretty damn good idea but you better come with your best offer right away with your New Orleans. If you go with this, well, okay, we'll make this offer and then, you know, go out and see what else is out there, and now if we have to, we'll offer more or something like that. Better not be your approach, because you're probably going to lose him in that case. So what would your offer to Drew Holiday be? I posited 5 for $25 as 5 years, $25 million, so $125 million contract for Drew at age 27. Does that sound about right to you? We think that would beat any other offers.
I think that would beat other offers in terms of total value, but also just kind of expected. I would much rather have him on that same deal for 4 years, but again, that might not be enough, because teams are going to offer him money. Point guard position is loaded in this class, but there aren't a lot of those guys who are going to really change teams. I mean, maybe George Hill does, but Lowry, it looks like he's going to come back. Chris Paul and Steph Curry look like they're going to come back, or even so, they're not available to the teams that would really be offering Drew and all that. So I think the Knicks are going to come calling. I think if the Magic would have to clear a bunch of money, but he would make some sense there, you know, those sorts of things. And
Philly
Philly, certainly.
Yeah, and Dallas has been a reported suitor, although their cap situation is a little more impacted. They got Nerlens Noel, if he's going to be on there. And then Dirk is due as a team option for $25 million. They'll probably decline that. Maybe if Dirk were willing to go back to playing for a lot less. But even so, like, he would have to sign that contract first to reduce his cap hold. And then you're still, even if Dirk took the minimum, you're still only looking at really $20 million in space, unless they're able to move Harrison Barnes or Wes Matthews, who I wouldn't think they would want to do that because those guys are an important part of their team. Dwight Powell, if they could move on from him, that's not looking like a good contract. Maybe that's Jose Barea. Maybe they could open up a little more space, but they don't have an overwhelming offer just sitting around there for Drew Holiday at this point. Yeah, Philly, you mentioned they got cap space for days. Although they'll probably want to save a little of it to renegotiate and extend Robert Covington. We'll get to that. I mean, if you were Drew Holiday, like, would you rather play in any of those other places other than New Orleans?
I consider the Knicks. I think that it's, first of all, he could get a very, very good insight from his brother in terms of what that experience was like, both the positive and the negative. And I don't think this is going to happen because we know how Wade's going to go. But if Chicago had space, that would be a nice fit. But I don't know that they will.
Yeah, I mean, they could dump Rajon Rondo, but then again, they have to decide on whether to do that by June 30th. He's got $3 million guaranteed this year, as we talked about on our preview for them, and the indications from Garpax have been that Rondo will return, and then they're probably not going to have the space. I don't think that, like, Chicago, even if Drew signs there, would be that much better than New Orleans. So yeah, maybe 5 for $75 gets it done, unless Philly is just going to, $5 for $125 would get it done. The absolute most that they could pay him, he's got 8 years of experience, would be a 5-year, $175 million deal. You would imagine that could get him back, but then they're pretty close to the tax line already just with that. You know, they're basically almost out of room unless they move some more salary as well. And clearly Drew not worth $30 million even this year at 27, and sure as hell won't be when he's 31 in the last year of that contract.
What are you thinking? I know a lot of it depends on Drew, but what are you thinking in terms of a guy like Dante Cunningham, or just kind of the wings that they could bring in if they really wanted to?
Yeah, well, Cunningham's another one of these guys they've had. I mean, they've played him at the 3 out of necessity, but he's really a 4. He's also 30 years old. $5.7 million cap hold for Cunningham. Again, that probably won't matter because they'll be over the cap. You know, I think something along those lines for like 2 years might be realistic for him. I don't think he helps them that much because they basically already have Solomon Hill, who I think can play that role a little bit better, certainly defensively, than Cunningham at this point, as, you know, a stretch-ish 4 who can defend on the perimeter and switch. I mean, he's a nice depth piece to have around, but I think he's probably more valuable to other teams. So I don't know that if I were New Orleans, I'd be making a great effort to re-sign him, as opposed to, because especially with the tax, you know, there's a pretty direct opportunity cost there, as opposed to just trying to use your full MLA. I think they could do a little bit better other than re-signing him, just because just getting anybody who can play as more of a pure wing, I think, should be a greater priority. A little housekeeping too, before we talk about who they might really try and pursue in free agency. They don't really have much in the way of non-guarantees. You recall that Jordan Crawford actually played quite well for them last season. He's under contract this year for $1.7 million non-guaranteed. The guarantee date's not until August 1st. Axel Toupin, who I think they should keep around, is guarantee date of January 10th, the league-wide cutdown date for the minimum this year. I think that he actually has some modicum of 3-and-D potential. They still have Etuan Moore as well. Moore would probably start at the 2. So they really just need, you know, they've got a decent backup point guard, Tim Frazier. So if they bring back Holiday, I mean, I think that they've got okay depth on this team. It's just they gotta get someone who can credibly start at the 3. They've got no one there at all, unless Quincy Pondexter can make a miracle return, and he's missed 2 full seasons, so I'm sure as hell not counting on that. And they also have Quinn Cook, who's not guaranteed as well at the minimum. I don't really have that much of an opinion on him. So who would you be looking at as someone that they should try to acquire in free agency?
It's going to be a challenging market considering how much money they want to spend, but I would be intrigued by somebody like CJ Miles. I think he could be a good fit, kind of a low usage but can hit open shots, that type of guy. Maybe Tabo Sefolosha, Anthony Morrow for really cheap. Those types of guys I think would
be. They definitely need, I mean, I think there's kind of 2 needs. I mean, there's one is just an actual 3-and-D guy, and even if they can clear out enough space under the tax by moving salary to use their full mid-level exception of $8.4 million to start this year. And of course, you can pay up to 4 years starting at $8.4 million with 5% annual raises. So they need like someone who can defend on the wing and also make a shot. I don't know if they can even find that guy. There's not that many of those guys in the market, and only paying $8.4 million, I don't know if you're getting that. And then they also just need like guys who are just like pure shooters as well. But I think those are a little bit more cheaply and easily found because they just have no one. I mean, I guess what you could say is, but then, you know, you're still playing Solomon Hill at the three, right? Like, I mean, in some of your lineups, you could say, all right, you know, if we sign a CJ Miles, he can just guard whatever crappy four man is on the other team. And like Solomon Hill can be our main wing defender. He's still even, I think, a little challenged in that role, but he could be solid there. And we'll just do a lot of switching and hope to contain that way. But then when you're playing AD and DeMarcus together, which are going to be down the end of games, now you can't really play Solomon Hill at the three. That's not enough shooting. So you need someone else who can defend and still hit a shot. And, you know, again, there's just not really those type of guys who are available at this point. A few that I thought of, you know, just as kind of bargain basement shopping, you mentioned Tabo, Lukumba Mute maybe as well, but you got the same problem that he's just too bad offensively. PJ Tucker, again, kind of more of a four offensively, same problem with him as Solomon Hill. Basically already have that same player. Nick Young, actually, I think could be like an okay fit as just someone who can create some shots. I mean, but expecting him to repeat what he did last year, and I think his defense was, well, it was lauded by Luke Walton, and he actually tried for the first time in a long time. I wouldn't expect him to repeat that, and it was probably overrated what he was doing last year, and he's 32. So, but again, beggars can't be choosers. I think on the shooting role, Ian Clark could be a fit next to Drew Holiday. Drew Holiday could guard the two. Clark could shoot some threes for him. Kyle Korver, Mike Dunleavy might be some guys that they could look at. I mean, I think having some more guys with just intelligence on the perimeter, like Dunleavy as a ball mover, you know, just he only going to play 15 minutes a game for you at this point. Korver probably only played 20, but you know, that's the type. And you mentioned CJ Miles. I mean, that's the strata that we're looking at. What about Brandon Rush? Right now. Yeah, no, I think, I mean, that's another one that we're probably higher on than just about anyone else. But yeah, I mean, there's probably a reason he hasn't played as much. But, you know, I think he's been an underrated player. But, you know, at 31, again, he's not that amazing. They could also try out the restricted market, maybe look for like, and because they also just need another scorer as well, someone, a perimeter scorer. I mean, I guess they got Jordan Crawford kind of to do that. But I don't know if you can expect him to repeat his performance from last year. But maybe Shabazz Muhammad might be someone they'd look at if the Timberwolves decide to move on from him. Tony Snell would be an awesome fit, but I don't think they have the money for him. Maybe what they could look at for him, and again, he's probably not strong enough really to play the three that much, but you know, again, beggars can't be choosers, would be like a sign and trade with the Bucks for Tony Snell. That might be something they could think about if the Bucks are like, hey, we just don't want to pay him this much. New Orleans could pay him. You know, and then New Orleans would try and give an asset. I'm not sure what that'd be. Future first round pick seems like a little bit too much there. They could also just try and make another trade for like a Wilson Chandler type, give up yet another first round pick in 2018. You know, I mean, the Dell Demps, I mean, the Pelicans at this point remind me of like, and if they stretch Oshik or Ajinta, it'll be even more like this, of like those old Cowboys and Redskins football teams that just like kept giving, like restructuring contracts and like giving big bonuses that then, you know, kept getting kicked down the road, and then finally they would have to pay the piper at a certain season. But the crazy thing is like they have this great young superstar where like their best days are supposed to be ahead of them, and they're just not.
And it's also hard, like with the wing market, that they're, I think you talked about how beggars can't be choosers. That could be even more prominent just in terms of actual supply, because a lot of these guys are going to be aiming higher than what the Pelicans can offer. And so maybe some of them will fall back into their market, but that's also going to take time. And it's also going to make it so that they probably won't get their best option. They'll be choosing between some less good ones.
Yeah. I mean, traditionally, New Orleans to get free agents has had to overpay, and they don't even have the money to overpay anymore. Anyone else on the wing? I mean, Tim Hardaway Jr., maybe they could look at him as well, depending on what Atlanta does with him. Although, again, you know, full MLE, probably not going to get it done to lure him away. None of these restricted. Maybe Bojan Bogdanović would be someone they could look at just to give him some more shooting, but he's horrible defensively as well. They don't really have the money for Andre Robertson, and he's not good enough offensively. You know, it's
Gerald Green.
Yeah, I mean, he's pretty duplicative of Jordan Crawford at this point, I think. So, well, and this also is a reason why I think that they're looking at their situation more closely. here. Omri Caspi would have had like a $6 million cap hold. That aspect of it is less valuable because they have basically a hard cap at the tax, I'm guessing. And so maybe their thought was his bird rights aren't that valuable. Number one, because we need to get better this year. I think from what I understand, that was just their thinking, that just we need another body and he might be out for the year, even though he wasn't. But then, you know, just keeping his $6 million cap hold on the books, he's not like a great 3-and-D guy, but frankly, he's probably the best of all these people that we've discussed so far. He's probably actually the best combination of offense and defense of any of them. Maybe CJ Miles, but again, all of these guys we're talking about are very limited in general on one side of the floor. But maybe the thought was, if we're going to keep him around, it's like straight up opportunity cost. The idea of having his bird rights and re-signing him isn't as useful because we got this hard cap essentially at the tax. I mean, I still would have kept him around because, you know, I don't know that they're going to get a better player than him, frankly. So yeah, it's pretty tough. And the other thing I'll say too about just their long-term future is, I mean, again, how do they get better? You know, the Cousins trade was a good trade. I would have done that for sure. But and maybe if they make the playoffs this year and they have a pretty good showing, AD and Cousins together, those guys just play a billion minutes and they overwhelm some team in the first round. Like, that's not impossible. They would have to retain Drew, obviously. You know, maybe they'd be okay. But it's just, they've got 3 years left of AD before free agency. And they better hope that this team as constructed is damn good, because they really have no way to get better again unless it's just trading a first round pick. Because whatever, if you have a 2018 first round pick that's in the middle of the first round expecting that player to contribute by the time AD can be a free agent, he would only have two seasons, is pretty unlikely. So that basically the only way is that they can get better at this point to try and keep AD, other than just paying him the designated player, which of course is might be enough to keep him anyway, is just by trading away draft picks and, you know, bargain basement signings that they have to hope work out. Or like Chick Diallo develops. Like Chick Diallo is like their only young guy of any note on this team right now.
The other thing, I think we don't need to discuss it, but I want to discuss it, is do you have an idea of what kind of offer it would take to get to trade Cousins this summer? And then how would you be thinking about that over the course of this year?
Well, there's no offer they would make to trade away Cousins now. I mean, there's no player they're going to get for Cousins that's going to, in theory, I mean, they might actually get players who would help them win more this year than Cousins. We just still don't know how well that partnership's going to work, whether they can get Cousins to defend. But they certainly, there's no player they could get who gives them the upside that Cousins does this year if he's really in shape and motivated and that partnership works really well. So I would be shocked if they were to make that trade, and certainly I don't think there's anybody who's like champing at the bit to give them an offer that's going to make them make that trade, especially remember, because, you know, Demps is perpetually under fire. I could see him get moved at the trade deadline if they're just totally out of it and Cousins has indicated he probably doesn't really want to stay there, or there's no reason to think that he would stay. They can still offer him the biggest deal. They'd be able to offer him 5 years starting at over $30 million a season, which might be enough to interest Cousins to stay. They'll have about a $35 million advantage or so on any other team in an extra year, which could matter to Cousins at age only 27, amazingly, next summer. DeMarcus Cousins was very young when he was drafted, obviously. But I mean, you would have to imagine that if they do trade him away, the market's kind of been set for him. So it would probably be just, you know, a team trading for him. And if a team trades for him, presumably at that point, it's a team that maybe would want his bird rights and could work out a deal with him ahead of time, or a team that's going to be in contention and it's just as a rental. But it's hard to imagine that he would even get like a solid starter in trade at the 2018 trade deadline, or more than just, you know, kind of, I mean, like the Serge Ibaka trade would probably be like a pretty decent proxy for what they could maybe expect to get for him at that point.
The only way that I would really seriously consider, beyond a team making just this stupid offer, which is always possible, is if he basically said, I'm not coming back. And I don't think that's going to happen, but at that point, you just have to recoup your cost.
And by the way, they'll have no space in 2018, in case you were wondering about that. Things getting better. I mean, unless, again, they were to move on from Oshik, and maybe, I still don't, but I don't see like the player that if they do move on from Oshik, that's going to make that much of a difference who's going to come there. You know what I mean? It really, the type of player that they need is at least a $20 million a year player, and they don't even necessarily have any of those on the market this year. You know, like they need like an Andre Iguodala or something like that. And even Iguodala could be slowing down and not be that useful anymore. All right, that'll do it for this segment on the Pels. And for today's show, thanks so much for listening. Don't forget about our sponsor today, Betterment.com/capspace is your URL to get up to 6 months of no fees. And we'll be back, going to take Monday off actually for Memorial Day. We'll be back on Tuesday. Big episode coming up then. Lonzo Ball going to do his scouting report. And also Dan Feldman going to join us for a look at the Detroit Pistons future. Talk to you all then.